hey, folks, I'm WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Tito Santana.
This is Kurt Angle.
This is Bret the Hitman Hart. And this is going out to Scott and Holly.
You are listening to the
Win Twice Wrestling Podcast
with Scott and Holly.
Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
And this holds for everybody. Ho!
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to listen to the incomparable Win Twice Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Scott and Holly. We always go over, brother, and that's the bottom line. Dig it? So sit back, relax, and prepare to be entertained.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 46 of the Win Twice Wrestling Podcast alongside your co-hosts, Scott and Holly.
Hello.
Right, Holly?
I'm good.
Still good?
Yeah, I'm very good.
Living the vida loca?
Better now than I was an hour ago, yeah.
Why'd you say that?
I'm more awake.
You're more awake? Oh, so being around me is kind of live and joy. That's nice to know.
Yeah.
Is it the energy that I come in with the intro?
Of course, that's what it is.
That one was a little bit too much even for me.
That was very...
It was like, hi, I've had Percocet. I'm great. I haven't, to be clear. Although I did have an allergy tablet, so I felt a bit stuffy this morning. So, I know, very dangerous times. So we had to, again, find a shorter episode because, you know, this will be going out when you're in the States.
Yes, it will.
Having a lovely time, tailgating, going to see...
This is tailgating day.
Is it actually tailgating day?
This is tailgating day, yeah.
Nice, that'd be really cool.
This is the Commanders versus the Bears day.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
I could be wrong, but I think this is this day.
Are you seeing any other sporting events while you're out there or planning to?
We'll probably go and watch the basketball.
Nice.
The Wizards. Enjoyed that last time I was there.
Shame they're shit, but if they're playing a good team, all good.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm genuinely really jealous. I'd love to see the NBA. I've seen the NFL when they've come over here, but never had the chance. Well, not had the chance, never thought to go and see an NBA game. And to be fair, every time I've been in the States, it's always been where it's the playoffs and you just can't get the tickets for that. So we had to pick another relatively shorter episode.
Yes,
so. You know, so we've already come off the back of the Raw one that you picked for last week. And I thought, do you know what? Let's go back to the old well.
Yeah,
let's uncover the Saturday night's main event cover, have a look what's underneath, because we are now on the fourth episode, I believe, the Saturday night main event series.
And is anything going to live up to the last one? Because I thought the last one was hilarious.
The last one is comfortably, even now, the worst show that we've had to cover.
So funny.
Not one redeemable quality.
The fact that they were all in Halloween costumes. Brilliant.
No.
I thought it was funny.
There was a mixed martial arts main event between Mr. Fuji and Steamboat.
Matches were shit, but the entertainment was funny.
I don't even know if it was.
Was it actually
the Halloween one last
time? I'm sure it was last time.
No, it's Thanksgiving. Halloween was the second one.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, either way, I thought it was funny.
Yeah, because Thanksgiving's November, so that makes sense.
Sure.
And now we're into the new year, as it were. So... this episode of Saturday Night's main event was on the 4th of January, 1986. Well, I said it was shown on the 4th of January, but it was actually filmed on the 19th of December, 1985. The venue was the Sundome in Tampa, Florida. The attendance was roughly around 8,000, and the TV rating was 10.4, which is very, very healthy indeed. There's a theme to this show, Holly, isn't there? As there always is.
I'll be honest, those are what keep me watching these. I know I have to, but it's kind of like, as soon as I put it on, I was like, oh, I wonder what it's going to be based around. That's what I hope for.
And care to share what that theme was for this one?
I mean, fun in the sun, I think.
Pretty much sums it up, to be honest.
Oh, it's great.
The show opening. And we are straight into this. Straight in at the deep end, pun intended.
Yes.
The show opens with a video package of sunny Florida at an outside swimming facility. On the screens, we have the Saturday Night's main event logo within a burning orange sun and the words Shines in Florida displayed underneath. Next to a wave machine pool, we see a very coked up Hulk Hogan in a yellow vest and sunglasses making himself a shake, which he puts a banana and fully shelled egg in.
See, I'll be honest, I thought, to start with, I thought he was making pina coladas.
And you're not a fan of that, but still you're like, this is interesting.
I would have, happily been on board with that, apart from what he does make.
It looked like a banana Nesquik to me, if I'm being honest. Mean Gene walks into the shot in a tuxedo-themed bathing suit from the Victorian era. And it will take something special to be outfit of the night from me from now on. Jean's, Jean's glasses even have the old lady cables attached to keep them secure should they fall, which is just wonderful.
Hogan
tells Jean he's preparing for that no good rattlesnake. What? However, on this occasion, he means Terry Funk. Hogan pours a cup of his abomination and then refers to it as his high-powered gasoline, and it would probably run a car better than a person, to be honest. His special Python protein drink, in fact, which is not the...
It doesn't sound appealing.
Oh, lovely. Drink your dick shake. Thank you very much. He, to be fair, with all the steroids, he could probably do with something to help the dick. Yeah. He hands the cup to Mean Gene and tells him to not dare tell Terry Funk about the recipe, but I doubt he could if he wanted to. Gene sips it and starts convulsing as the power surges through him. Now he's flexing and Hogan is squeezing his arm, saying, a little bit more bicep and a little bit more tricep. You should drink some more, brother. Which he then does. Now we see footage of the hillbillies in inflatable rings going down a lazy river as Piper looks on with binoculars, surrounded by women.
I'm sorry, but what part of all of this is not fucking hilarious?
I'm not saying it's not funny. He then comes out with Moby Dick with feet.
Brilliant.
Whilst looking at Uncle Elmer. Alongside Hot Rod is Jesse Ventura, sunbathing on his front, getting a rub down from one of the many women there. Jealous, Holly?
I was just happy to see Jesse.
Now we finally see the usual opening montage to signal the start of the show, featuring a host of the wrestlers we're scheduled to see throughout the night. Live in the arena, we're taken to Vince McMahon on commentary, facing down the camera, and boy, are these audio levels off.
Oh, yeah.
Massively off. You can hardly hear him until the crowd quiet down quite a bit.
I wish it stayed like that.
Why?
What he's about to do.
Vince begins doing a rundown of some of the upcoming action, including a peace match as a result of the recent Geneva summit. Okay. Between Corporal Kirshner and Nikolai Volkov. What the fuck is a peace match, Holly?
I don't know.
I like to consider myself fairly well versed in the world of professional wrestling from a fan's perspective. I have never fucking heard of a peace match before.
If it's a peace match,
don't have a match.
No one wins.
Or everyone wins.
Because wouldn't you just be like, you know, oh, peace, I didn't win, you didn't win, let's just call a truce.
Well, I would also argue that having any type of
fighting
altercation and put peace in it, well, technically, isn't that war?
Wow.
You're fighting for peace. Deep.
Very, very.
Very deep.
Yeah.
Very deep, very early. Not the title of my sex tape. JYD and Steamboat will be taking on Morocco and Mr. Fuji.
I don't want to know.
George the Animal Steel and Macho Man
will
also be on the card, as well as Hulk Hogan defending the WWF title against Terry Funk. And yes, that is every match happening on the show that you now know about.
Mm-hmm.
McMahon goes to continue, but is cut off by the very flamboyantly dressed Jesse Ventura, who walks into shot wearing tie-dye looking tights, Joseph's Technicolor fucking dream cape, and a velvet beret, which of course has sunglasses to complete the set.
Read my top bullet point.
Jesse walks in wearing Joseph's Technicolor dream coat. I called it a cape, but we're there. That's brilliant. Is that why you went?
Yeah.
We're on the same.
Also, fucking love Jesse.
Of course honestly. You do. Nothing wrong with that.
First time also seeing him prepped for wrestling.
Indeed. Ventura reminds us of the hillbillies' attack on him, and all I can hear is his loud and long earrings.
They're a bit dangly.
Bit dangly is an understatement, Holly. Ventura says he'll be the first announcer to back up his words by stepping into the ring and getting involved in the action. Vince says he's pleased with this, as he won't have to listen to Ventura's commentary, and now Holly is torn. We've got Jesse in the ring, but we don't have him talking about what's going on in the ring.
I know.
What one out for you here? The people need to know.
Well, I've never seen Jesse in the ring.
I've barely seen him in the ring, if I'm honest.
I'll take that. And actually, what he does next, I actually didn't mind.
Now it's Scott's turn to be deliriously happy, as Ventura informs Vince he won't be allowed to sit on commentary and talk smack about him on his own. Jess has found the only person with enough brains to replace him. Enter Bobby Heenan, in a fantastic fucking black sparkling suit.
Yeah.
So you like that?
Yeah.
Okay. What about it did you like?
Well, what, you just want me to say that I like that it was Heenan, don't you?
Yeah.
I know. I like the fact that Jesse kind of... I don't know. I like the way it works, though, because even when the match happens, the whole time, Heenan the whole way through is just like, Jesse said you'd do this. Jesse said you'd say this. And I thought, actually, it's quite annoying because That is funny because it's annoying to Vince.
Okay.
Whether it is or not, it's just a character. But
are we warming up to Bobby Heenan a bit more?
Maybe a little bit, but
okay.
If you offered me him over Jesse, it would be a no.
Well, yeah, I'm not offering you. I appreciate from the commenting aspect why you'd like Jesse.
If you could give me Jesse and Heenan and no Vince, fine.
How the fuck would that work? Because they're both heels.
Fine.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd be up for that. Get Vince.
I'll tell you what.
It'd be fine.
JR with Heenan.
Okay.
And Jesse, that would be interesting.
Oh yeah, all three of them.
That'd be very interesting. Be I don't know if that would work, if that'd be too much. But
throw Savage in there as well for a laugh.
Throw Savage in there and throw me not watching it out the window.
Fine.
Vince welcomes Heenan to the hot seat, and the Brain thanks Vince and says he hopes he can live up to the high standards of broadcasting excellence set by Mr. Ventura.
Love that.
McMahon isn't sure he heard that right and repeats it back to Heenan, who says, "That's right."
Yeah.
Vince now sends us to Mean Gene at the entryway, as is customary for these shows, and he wishes Heenan good luck on commentary. Gene turns his attention to the men beside him in Roddy Piper and Bob Orton. Mm. Gene asks about their match with the Hillbillies. Hot Rod goes into them about eating pig's feet and playing the banjo to one another. He says that they are in the deep freeze against him tonight, and Jess walks into the camera shot to complete their trio. We see brief footage from the last Saturday night's main event, where the Hillbillies cornered Ventura in the ring. Jesse now pats Oakland on the head and tells Piper to not let this little cue ball bother him. Glass houses, Jess. Fucking look what you got up there, mate. I mean, you're not little, I'll give you that.
He's a big one.
He's a big cue ball. Ventura says the Hillbillies are going down tonight.
Downtown,
Lester Brown, exactly. As the Hills make their way to the ring, we get replayed footage from Uncle Elmer's wedding where Piper interrupted the ceremony. Back in the aisleway, we see Mean Gene is now with the Hillbillies. Hillbilly Jim says they're professional athletes, and they will act like professional athletes. But all I can think of, Cousin Junior looks very fucking different here. Hillbilly Jim says their family honour is on the line, and they will do whatever it takes to win. Oh, hang on, Gene just said Cousin Luke, I think. So that is a different redneck. So I was like, he's cleaned himself up, but it makes him look completely different. And yeah. I was like, oh, it's because it is.
Yeah.
Kind of miss Cousin Junior.
It still plays the fucking part.
Well, he doesn't do the dancing.
In my notes, I've called him Cousin Barefoot because I couldn't remember his name.
Cousin
he's
Barefoot.
He's the only one that has no shoes on.
Luke was the... who later became Bushwhacker. I'm joking. It wasn't him. Different Luke.
Okay.
But I just look on your face. I was like, if I leave that out
don't.
You're going to think that, it doesn't really look like him. When did he get the New Zealand accent? Opening match of the night, Roddy Piper, Cowboy Bob Orton and Jesse Ventura versus the Hillbillies. As the Hillbillies enter the ring, Heenan on commentary says he thinks they should be made to wear shoes like all the other wrestlers instead of these dirty Levi's. Holly, I have to say, I'm looking forward to see Jess wrestle for the first time on this show. And it's in fact he and Uncle Elmer that start things off.
Yep.
The blue, white and red ropes in that order are messing with my brain, as the top and bottom colours should be the other way around. Not saying I hate it, but it did take me a while to get used to it.
Okay.
They fucked up putting the ropes in that order.
Does it matter?
Yeah.
Why?
Because go back and watch all the, like, the golden era. Is it golden era? Yeah, I guess it is. WWF, it's always red, white, blue. Right. Always. They flipped it round and my brain starts to, it doesn't, and we see some other colour schemes later, Hulk Hogan, that really threw me for a loop as well.
Okay.
The two men circle until Jess points, distracting Elmer, and takes advantage with a rake to the eyes.
Boo, Jesse.
Do you know what? If you hadn't booed, I was going to sit here in silence until you booed.
I'll still boo.
Big right hands in the corner from Ventura and he is now choking the big man. We getting a boo for the choke?
No.
Okay, fine. Not for long, though, as Elmer powers him off and strikes with a big blow of his own. Jess staggers across the ring and drops to one knee before a second blow sends him face first off the buckles and to the canvas. Very impressive double choke lift by Elmer before throwing Jess to the canvas. Face first goes Jess into the boot of Hillbilly Jim, and now he's the legal man. Side headlock by Jim as Heenan says that Jess was right. McMahon is very biased on commentary. Push off by Ventura, and he hits a knee to the gut as Hillbilly returns from the ropes. Tag to Piper, and the blue pants with yellow knee pads will take some getting used to as well. Right hands by Piper send Jim staggering into his own corner, and he tags in Cousin Luke. As soon as he enters, Hot Rod is smiling and offers him a handshake. Luke is wary, and after circling for a while, accepts the offer, but kicks Piper in the gut in a do unto others before they would do unto you moment. Big clubbing blows by Luke, but Piper rattles off some heavy hands of his own. Orton gets the tag, and they put Luke down with double back elbows off a whip. Running, falling punches by Cowboy, who tags Piper back in, holds Luke, and Hot Rod connects with a right hand. Vince says that Orton's broken arm is the slowest healing injury in the history of wrestling, and he might well be correct. Double throat thrust and huge knee lift by Piper, who spits at Hillbilly Jim on the apron. Tag once more for Cowboy, who kicks Luke to the gut but finds himself headbutted in return. Orton scurries to tag Ventura in, and Luke acts dumb, just looking around as Cowboy secures his leg for Jess to strike. Heenan suggests Luke is too dumb to get back in the corner, and the evidence is there, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Snapmare by Jess, who puts all his weight into raking the boot across the eyes. Tag to Piper, who's laughing and slapping Luke in the face lightly as he's held by Ventura. Eye poke! And now Cowboy is the legal man. Up top, Orton drops a standing elbow between the eyes. Now Piper is back in. As Luke muscles Piper into the Hillbilly's corner, Orton and Ventura create a distraction so the ref misses the tag to Jim and has to send him back out. Orton gets the tag and body slams Luke before quickly tagging out to Piper once more. Luke blocks a right and manages to tag in Elmer, and the crowd actually go nuts.
They do, so it's just odd, but...
Okay. I'm fine with that. I like the crowd getting involved. The two start brawling, with Hot Rod hitting the midsection and Elmer delivering overarm clubs from above. Piper rakes the eyes, but Elmer no-sells it and hits a big right hand. Bear hug time, as Hot Rod is raised high into the air.
Borrowed.
This time, the eye rake is effective and Elmer lets go of the hold. Pier 6 brawl as all men are in the ring fighting and the ref has lost control. I thought there was going to be a disqualification here.
Yes.
The Hillbillies clear the ring of the heels as we go to a commercial break. When we return, the heels re-enter and the brawl starts once more, with the Hillbillies getting the better of it again. With things having calmed down, Piper and Jim are the two legal men as Hot Rod headbutts the Hillbilly. The second one sees Jim stand bolt upright though and connect with a big blow of his own. Wristlock by Hillbilly, and he prevents Piper from walking to his corner. Instead, Piper turns to face Jim and paintbrushes him a number of times, but misses with a right hand and the wristlock is still applied. Hot Rod manages to take the action to his corner and tags Jess in. The three hit Jim with rights in the corner now. Ventura tags Orton, who runs and delivers a big elbow to the back as Jess holds him in place. Now Piper is legal, but Jim blocks the right hand to land one of his own before tagging Luke back in. Piper screams and runs at Luke, who hits a big side-swinging standing double axe handle to all three members of the opposing team, knocking Orton and Ventura off the apron. I liked that.
Yeah.
Just seeing, because he was swinging it like, that would do some damage if you hit someone with that. I just thought it was different, yeah. And I actually liked it. It was good different.
Okay.
Double axe handle to the back, well, we can't win them all, of Piper's neck, but Hot Rod slips out of a body slam attempt and locks on a sleeper hold. Jim enters the ring but is sent back out courtesy of an Orton dropkick, and Elmer begins tussling with Ventura in the corner. Because they're not really doing anything.
I just said Jess gets belly squished quite a few times.
I mean, it's not too dissimilar to what I put in a minute. All six men are brawling in the ring again as Luke is still struggling in the hold. Eventually, he manages to throw Piper off and hits the ropes, only to be struck with the cast to the back of the head, causing him to fall flat on his face. As Elmer continues to splash and squish Jess in the corner, Hot Rod reapplies the sleeper hold, and Holly, please can you do the honours?
He's asleep. He's still asleep.
The match is over. Piper gets the win for his team, courtesy of technical submission.
Yeah.
Holly, what do you make of the opening contest here?
Do you know what? I didn't mind it. I had to, again, kind of put myself in like a... At that time, I imagine that was very entertaining. And I didn't hate it. I thought it was all right. I did give it 2 out of 5.
Okay.
But I actually didn't mind it. It was fine.
2.5 stars I gave it. Yeah. I thought it was perfectly serviceable. Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of brawling, but the tags were quick. They kept things at a decent pace. Elmer didn't do anything that I went, oh my God, what's this?
The story that they were telling was fine.
Yeah.
My biggest upset was the fact that Roddy and Bob are wearing the same colour pants.
Yeah, but they're on the same team.
Yeah, that's really annoying. But so Jesse's on their team too.
Differently. Yeah, well, Jesse's never going to wear blue trunks.
No.
Could you imagine how weird that would look?
But do you know what I mean? I was just a bit like, oh, why is that different?
Come no, on. I was fine with that.
But apart from that, I thought it was fine.
The right team won as well.
Yeah.
Good way to start the show. With the match over, we go back to Vince and Bobby, who discuss the win for Ventura's team, before the man himself returns into frame with beret and sunglasses back on.
Vince does do a very good job here. I'll give him credit of looking just like so bored when Jesse and Bobby are talking. He just deadpans it into like nothing behind the eyes. It's very good.
He thanks Heenan for stepping in and gives him a hearty handshake. Jess thought he was outstanding in the ring and expects Heenan was nothing less than perfect behind the desk. Vince suggests a tag team between the two, and Jess warns him that Heenan might see him out of a job and in the unemployment line, which Vince does a holly eye roll, if I might say so myself. I was fine with Jess coming back on commentary, but I was just like, oh, I thought Heenan might get
given you Heenan.
I thought they might keep him there for the whole run. And to be fair, I said, I didn't have an issue with Jess coming back. I just was like, ah. Oh. Shame.
Yeah, it was a bit odd, actually, I suppose, in hindsight, to think of that.
Don't worry, we're back at the water park, Holly.
Oh, God.
The segment that keeps on giving, and it gives throughout the night.
It really fucking
does. It gives. There's so much giving here. Vince now sends us back to the water park, where Mean Gene sets the background for the water slide challenge between Jimmy, Mouth of the South Hart, and the Junkyard Dog. Hart says this is a matter of pride for him, as we saw how the dog embarrassed him on TV. He says he can't wrestle the dog, and obviously the next logical step is a water slide challenge. This will apparently prove that Jimmy is the better man.
Highly doubtful.
Yeah, but you're never going to win anyway. You have to be, if you're the bigger you are, the quicker you're going to go down that slide.
Exactly.
And
I know that, and I'm not that clever.
You're fine. And Junkyard Dog is a chunky boy.
Of course he is.
He's thick. He's built thick with two C's. Gene turns the mic to JYD, who is talking so low and fast, he is either heading up an auction or commentating on a horse race. I'm not entirely sure which of the two he's doing.
Good, because I had no fucking clue what he was saying.
All I hear him say is, cute red undies, and let's get things underway. Okay. As they start their contest, we hear... I do know why he said the red undies comment. Do you remember?
When he pulled the fake branding, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, but he ripped off Jimmy Hart's trousers and he was wearing red undies. So I assume he was doing a comment to that. Or he just wants to see some red undies.
And
I mean,
maybe Jimmy Hart was wearing red Speedos. We don't see them.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, we don't, so, do we?
Maybe.
What a bummer. Gutted. As they start their contest, we hear Jess say that he thinks Hart had a problem as he got a slow start and JYD easily beats him to the pool. Ventura suggests it's because the dog is used to being on his back. Yeah. Shots fired.
Okay, yeah, so I heard this and I was like, I don't understand. Like,
getting pinned, not getting fucked.
I see. Right, I didn't make the correlation. I was like, I don't really get the point there.
Yeah, okay. He just meant he looks up at the lights, okay, he loses a lot. Standing next to Funk, wait, hang on. No, I got carried away there. At poolside, we see Jess in a feathered belly dancer sarong with little swimming Speedos on, and Holly, I am sure, is very, very happy.
I fucking love Speedos. Yeah. I really do. And I don't know why. I wish I could actually understand why. And to me, it doesn't matter. Right, I'm trying to... How can I say this? It doesn't matter if you've got, like, a rippling six-pack, a little bit toned, or a dad bod.
Or this.
I fucking love Speedos.
Really?
I really do.
I was going to say, I could put you off Speedos. I could wear a pair and then you wouldn't want to see them.
I don't know what it is about them. I just really like
So you genuinely don't think like...
I think every guy should own a pair of Speedos.
Okay, so like a bloke like me could wear that and you'd go, yeah, that's what
it
should be.
I just like Speedos. I really like them.
All right, fair enough.
Don't know why.
Each their own.
The fact that Jesse's wearing them is even better, but I don't know what it is.
Do you want me to wear Speedos to the next progress show we go to?
It might be a bit cold.
No, I wear stuff over it, but I just go, Holly.
Wait, no, you can wear it when you go with the lads.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because I'm not going to the next one. So
no, you're not.
You and the lads can sit there in your Speedos.
I don't see an issue.
I mean, people are there wearing them wrestling, so...
Exactly.
Fair.
Yeah, get the Lost Property team started.
Of course.
Exactly. Going up against the Smoking Aces, I'm sure. Oh, that outfit. Standing next to Funk, Ventura says that Hart was hindered by his own footwear and pulls off like this gripped Veruca sock or some shit that Hart was wearing as he came down the slide. Jess asks Funk what he's doing by the pool, as he doesn't look like a beach person. Not sure the relevance of that, as they aren't at a fucking beach, but Terry says that when he beats Hulk for the title, all the media will want his picture, so he's going to get a nice tan.
Okay.
Ventura says he's not sure if Sports Illustrated are here, and Funk says that they had better be, as they put that bronze blowhard Hogan on the cover, and if they don't put Terry on the cover when he wins, he will fry them both with his branding iron.
Yeah, okay.
Jess sends us all put talcum powder on their bot. Jess sends us over to the voice of Gorilla Monsoon, who talks over footage from Denver last year where Hogan was about to beat Funk but stopped short to attack Hart, who had jumped up onto the apron. We then see Funk assault Hogan with a branding iron and drive it into his chest. That Hogan doesn't react to at all.
Thank God. I'm glad.
But when they take it away, it doesn't look like he's got the red mark.
Which looks more realistic. Agreed. Than the white shit.
Agreed. Funk thinks this has made him champion, and when he realises this is not the case, he throws Hebner out of the ring, and we end with a brilliant cutting end image of him twatting the guardrail on his ass, pulling a pained face, like...
Yeah.
Loved it. It's not even the right Hebner, but I don't care. Back in the arena, Mean Gene is stood alongside the Hulkster, and he asks the champ if he has any special plans for Terry Funk tonight. There sure is, Mean Gene! Hogan recaps how he was attacked, but he says to ensure this won't happen again, he has a surprise for Funk. And then he goes, makes some sort of noise like that. And, oh, that meant the JYD, apparently.
Apparently so.
I thought it meant Henry O. Godwin, who wouldn't be there for another 8 years. JYD walks into screen, and Hogan informs that he will be in his corner. JYD, he's doing double duty tonight, as
he
JYD.
He really is. Hope he gets paid twice.
Well, yeah, he won't. JYD says he is a seeing eye dog and he can see really well. Shame about the talking. That's all he says.
I know, it's so dumb.
JYD was considered a good promo as well.
Yeah.
But the stuff we hear from him is gibberish. Every dog has his day. Brilliant. Now the next bit is baffling, okay?
Okay.
The dog says he'll be closer to Jimmy Hart than Beaver's knees. Is what it sounds like he says. I don't know what he says, but all I could make out was Beaver's knees. Are we closer than Beaver's knees?
I don't know. I can't help you.
I mean, I guess they're pretty close. I mean, sure.
I've never seen a beaver. I don't know. An animal, don't be rude. I've never seen one. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, no. I've not seen one in person, I don't think, maybe.
No.
Hulk says the dog needs a bone to chew on, and Terry Funk is mine, brother.
Well. Whatever floats your boat.
Well, Terry Funk, apparently, in this case. And speaking of which, we go straight to that match.
Yeah.
The main event again, partway through the show, but that's a theme on the Saturday night main event as well. We've got Terry Funk with Jimmy Hart versus Hulk Hogan with the Junkyard Dog for the WWF title. Were you looking forward to this match, at least in terms... Okay.
No, I don't... I don't know, I just don't care.
I was looking forward to it.
Really?
Yeah, because Terry Funk's got a unique perspective. It's not really the traditional WWF style.
Yeah.
It's a bit more rough and ready and wild and crazy. Yeah. And I thought that was an interesting prospect of Hogan just going up against a big man who will beat him around a little bit, he'll hulk up and then he'll beat them. This was something different.
Sure.
And that was intriguing to me.
Oh, okay.
The same way that I was intrigued with Bob Orton, who he had the match with, was either no, because the last one was Andre and Hogan.
Get his chaps off.
Exactly. So that was again interesting to me. Same reason for this, except I was more interested in this one because I care more about Funk as a wrestler than I do Bob Orton.
Fair.
Hulk Hogan makes his way to the ring with bandana in mouth, and he is sporting a new colour combination with blue boots and trunks alongside red knee pads. Holly, thoughts?
Yeah, fine. I prefer this than the white.
I prefer the white.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't think anyone should wrestle in white.
Well, you do run a obvious risk, I will say that. White trousers, maybe, over something, but...
The one person that springs to mind that I will give a pass to wrestling in white tights is Edge. But they're not even just plain white. They're white with, like, all the emblems and stuff on them. I just feel like...
Punk's worn white.
Messy.
We've seen Punk wear white.
Yeah,
fine. Vladimir Kozlov?
No.
I'm trying to think who else historically has worn white. Andrade?
Yeah. He could be in the allowable club, I suppose.
Ironically, I was just checking the figure I have of him on the shelf and he's wearing yellow. Actually, do we have anyone wearing white? Shane O'Mac? No. I don't think we do, actually.
White pants or white tights?
Kofi's got blue and white, so that doesn't really count.
I don't know. I'm just not a massive
RVD with the unitard.
Yeah.
There's a bit of white there, but again, there's other colours, so fair enough.
But it's personal preference.
Yep, each their own. In the ring, we can see Funk assaulting Howard Finkel for reasons, and he does play the madman very well, if we're being honest. The dog has Hot by the jacket and marches him into the chair against the guardrail at ringside to make sure he stays where he should be. You happy with that, I assume? Yes,
very much so.
I'll be honest, you might not like it. Jimmy Hart's outfit, it's up there. It is up there.
Okay.
When we return from a quick commercial, the match is about to begin. In the corner of the screen, we can see Jimmy Hart still sat down and threatening to fight the fans surrounding him that are tapping him on the shoulders. Collar and elbow tie-up sees Funk march Hogan in the corner. Whip attempt is reversed twice before Hogan sends the challenger into the buckles and connects with the corner clothesline. Funk crumples between the ropes and takes a delayed bump outside of the floor. Very Mick Foley. I wonder where Mick Foley got that from. Vince makes mention of the fact that JYD will be watching the backside of Hulk Hogan. Direct quote.
Oh.
And the camera happens to be positioned in a way that makes it look exactly like that is what is happening at this moment. Funk returns to the ring and they lock up once more. Terry marches the champ back to the ropes and unloads with some double crotch. No, no he doesn't. Unloads with some double cross ranch chops fresh from the butcher's counter. Whip is reversed once more and Hogan drops down. Funk hits the ropes and almost stumbles right over but completes his journey when he turns into a charging clothesline from the Hulkster. JYD warns Hart, who looks to go and help Funk, and he quickly returns to his chair. The challenger returns to the ring and we get our third lockup. Side headlock from Hogan, but Funk pushes off and drops down. But instead of running over, Hulk continues to step off Terry's back each time he runs by, causing the challenger to crawl free of the ring and, you guessed it, grab the little table next to the ring and take that and all the people with him. Brilliant.
That has to happen every time.
With Terry Funk, it does.
Every time.
He likes to just keep people on their toes, I think, does the Funkster. Funk aimlessly throws one of the yellow plastic chairs into the ring, which Hulk grabs, sets up and sits on, beckoning the challenger back in. Sign. Jimmy Hart's got branded buns.
Oh, okay.
Back in the ring and they circle one another cautiously. Fourth lockup sees Hulk backed into the corner where he eats a number of southpaw overhand chops before reversing the position and unloading with big right hands. Corner whip sends Funk up and over to the apron from where Hulk snapmares him back in over the top. Back suplex by Hogan, who goes for a delayed pin that gets a two count. Right hand by Hogan, but Terry hits a big headbutt, and whilst Hebner pirouettes, Funk hits a kicking low blow that drops the champion. He's like, oh shit, I'm not supposed to see this. And then just spins for no reason. It was like Matt Hardy from Raw doing his little, yeah, I landed, spin round, oh, I've been kicked in the face. Funk climbs to the top rope, but Hogan shakes it, and he lands crotch first before falling into the ring in a heap. Poetic justice, Vince calls that.
Ooh.
Atomic drop by Hogan. Headbutt follows and we now see a running lariat connect. Elbow drop lands and the crowd are getting loud. Hogan signals the end may be near as he secures a side headlock on Funk. He gets pushed to the ropes where Jimmy grabs him by the ankle. The Hulkster is out of the ring after him and Hart almost runs into JYD before deciding to scurry under the ring. The cameras train on Jimmy, who is under the ring screaming for someone to get the JYD away. I like that.
Yeah.
That was good. Has he annoyed you yet?
He just annoys me by being there, Robbie.
By existing.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Hogan makes his way back into the ring and after hitting a chop is choked by some tape or rope that Funk seemed removed from his tights. Hulk is on his knees and is fading as Dave Hebner cannot see the illegal use of tape. Here it is. Ugly pile driver to Hogan.
Horrible.
Makes Holly wince and he shakes his leg after impact so you know it hit hard.
It's horrible.
One, two, no. Hulk only just edges his shoulder off the canvas and McMahon says that is the closest Hulk has ever come to losing the title. To be fair, it's not like a powerful kick out. It's just literally, oh, I've got it up.
Yeah.
I thought he sold that very well. The boot is raked over the eyes of the champion and the crowd are getting really loud now. Feeding off the crowd, Hogan battles to his knees, and now the right jabs of Funk look to be having no effect to the Hulkster, who is shaking his head. And now it's the turn with a number of right hands from the champion. Whip into a big back elbow, but Hogan prevents Funk from falling down. Second whip sees Hogan connect with a big boot that causes Funk to fall to the apron between the ropes. Jimmy Hart is on the apron with a branding iron, and as Hogan looks to suplex Funk back in, Hart hits him with it in the midsection, which results in Funk falling on top for the cover. Only a two count as Hogan's foot is over the ropes. JYD makes his way around and clobbers Hart, which Holly cheers.
Oh no!
That's amazing timing. Meanwhile in the ring, Funk has Hebner by the shirt, saying he should be the winner. The Hulkster takes the opportunity to hit a running clothesline and makes the cover for the 1, the 2, the 3. Hogan retains the WWF title. Funk is livid and has him by the shirt again, him being the ref, and they fall between the ropes and onto the timekeeper's table once more. Now he's tossing chairs into the ring. Thinking better of it, Howard Finkel stays on the apron to avoid the raining plastic chairs as he announces Hogan as the winner. Holly, what do you think of the match?
Yeah, fine. I thought it was mildly entertaining, but in a sense of it was more comical, I think, than anything else. But it's fine. I gave it bang on in the middle, 2.5. It was all right.
2.5 stars.
Aww.
I thought this was good, and I scored it the same as the match before it. Yeah. I was tempted to even go a bit higher, and then I changed my mind last minute, but it wouldn't have gone, certainly wouldn't have gone above 3. I probably would have just put it one notch up from where I did. But yeah. I actually enjoyed it. Yeah. I thought it was decent.
I thought it was all right. I actually like the bit after where you see Funk dragging away Hart. It's so funny.
I've got that in my brilliant. Next section of notes, but you're right, brilliant. It's brilliant. And you're right with, you said it, you found it comical, and I don't think that's a bad thing, because Funk always had a way of doing like kind of pratfalls and comedy spots that was still believable in the context of the match. So that's a credit to him for being able to do that. I also think that at this point in the show, I found it a relatively easy watch.
Yeah.
Only so far as it was still very fresh in my mind how bad the Saturday night's main event was before. And it was... What was it? Oh, maybe it was... Oh, I think you might be right, actually, on the Halloween front. Because I was thinking Roddy Piper doing the... candy and all that nonsense. Uh-huh. But every match on the last show was diabolical. Mm. And we've had two now, and they've both been pretty decent by both of our standards. So that says a lot to me. Yeah. So I felt a bit positive going forward in this show. As we return from commercials, we see Funk dragging a motionless Hart back up the aisle by his ankle, which is fantastic, before we see a number of replays from the title match that just took place. Standing in the ring is Mean Gene to interview the champ, and says he didn't expect to see action like this. Hogan tells Funk to drag his dead manager off, but he hasn't had enough and invites Funk to come back. Not a good promo by Hulk.
Mm-mm.
Mean Gene says JYD did a good job of keeping an eye on Jimmy Hart, and the dog replies, "They don't call me Deputy Dog for nothing." Nobody calls him that. We're now taken back to the electro shock treatment George Steele went through, and his day out at the zoo with Mean Gene, and I start laughing.
Yep.
Back to the water park, and we see Steele go down a small water slide before being handed a rubber ducky and splashing Captain Lou and Mean Gene. Oakland asks if there will be any ring rust on George, and Lou asks if is that because of the water. Water rust.
Yeah.
Very clever.
Yeah.
He does go on to say that the animal will be 100% both mentally and physically. Ducky.
It's just bizarre.
Elsewhere in the water park, we see Jess ask Savage if he's come up with a strategy against the animal, as Liz looks worryingly down at the water as she has stood right next to the edge of a drop. I bet you knew where this was going.
Funnily enough, I did.
Macho Man asks why he should be worried about him and asks Ventura what they call him. Jesse says, Macho Man. Then asks what they call Steel. The animal. Should a Macho Man be scared of an animal? He has his arm around Liz, who looks quite frankly as though she's been kidnapped. Savage says his main concern is teaching Liz how to swim and goes to shove her into the pool, but Ventura stops him and asks if he's not going to give her a couple of lessons first.
Sure I am. Lesson number one.
And then he throws the poor cow off the ledge into the water.
It had me laughing, I'll be honest.
And she screams all the way down until she hits.
That's funny.
As she thrashes around, Jess is still laughing, even as they go back to commentary.
So funny.
Vince says how dare Jess laugh at that situation, but Ventura says, just imagine how it will go when Savage teaches Liz how to skydive.
It's just funny. That segment for me was funny. And then it comes on to the next match, and I'll be honest, we know Savage is, you know, there's two sides to him, and I see the things he does in this one, and I'm like, oh, Don't ruin it.
The match that Holly is speaking of course, is Macho Man Randy Savage with Miss Elizabeth versus George the Animal Steele with Captain Lou Albano. As ever, Savage and Liz are in matching spectacular gear as they head their way to the ring. Macho Man gets caught interacting with the crowd as Liz is holding the ring ropes open for him. During this time, George Steele slowly approaches and strokes her arm before placing the top of his head up against her. Liz looks concerned.
As you would.
Yeah. Captain Lou comes over and ushers Steele away, who goes a bit mental in the process, and Savage points an accusatory finger at his manager as he enters.
Yeah.
Vince said it's like King Kong. Like the animal liking the woman. Yeah, it's exactly like that, Vince. Savage is yelling at her and grabs her by the chin before sending her into the corner. Holly, do you recognise the referee for this match?
No.
I bet you didn't. The official for the match between George the Animal Steele and Macho Man Randy Savage was none other than Dean Malenko, who got his start as a referee in the Tampa region.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't have...
Because I just caught a glance of him and went, that looks like Dean Malenko, and went, I think that's... And then I googled it straight away.
Oh, wow.
Dean Marengo.
Yeah, Marengo.
Marengo. Does that help? Does that ring a bell?
Thank you, yeah.
So yeah, he actually started off in the Tampa area as a ref, and this is what happened. Savage hits the ropes and stops, but when Steele charges at him with his wild monkey routine, Macho Man jumps out of the ring to take a powder, and I'm now having flashbacks to their awful WrestleMania 2 match.
Mm.
Back in the ring, and we get the same routine once more, and my heart sinks. Savage runs to the top of the buckles before re-entering, and the two men now lock up. Savage gets pinned against the ropes before the animal runs him across the ring and throws him over the top to the floor. Steele goes to follow but gets caught dead in his tracks, staring at Liz. Savage is back in the ring and continues going up to the top turnbuckles to assert dominance, I imagine.
Who knows?
When the animal does re-enter, Savage rushes him and has a front face lock applied before running two knees to the side of his head. The animal begins fighting back with right hands and a kick that sends Savage to the outside. Quick to recover, Macho Man drags Steele out with him and unloads with elbows to the head. Steele fires back and begins chasing Savage around the ring until he hides behind Liz.
Tut, tut.
The crowd is not very macho, is it?
No.
The crowd erupt with boos. The animal stops dead again and Savage returns to the ring where he looks to bull rush the animal but finds himself countered with a body slam. It is feeding time in the zoo as Steele tucks into a top turnbuckle and sends the padding flying. This leaves him wide open to a blindside attack from Savage, but Steele rubs the padding into Macho Man's eyes, sending him rolling to the outside, where Liz tends to him. The animal howls like a monkey in Liz's direction, and this distracts him long enough for Macho Man to go to the top rope, jump most of the way across the ring to connect with a double axe handle, and this is enough for the one, the two, the three. Savage is your winner by pinfall. As soon as the bell sounds, Savage leaves the ring, scoops Liz up and marches backstage. Holly, what did you think?
It pains me, but I thought it was awful.
Yeah, it was.
So bad. And I hate the Savage in and out of the ring. It just bores me. And if you actually wrote down only specifically what happened, there'd be probably about two lines of any form of wrestling that actually happened in that.
He's body slammed. Double axe handle from the top.
I can't think of anything else.
Yeah.
For shit, I gave it a 0 out of 5.
No score.
No, and that pains me because it's Savage, but I think also he wasn't a very nice gun in there, so
I gave it a 1.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I gave it a 1 is actually because, and I normally try and do what you do and block out everything else and just think about this match alone. But one of the worst matches we've ever reviewed was George the Animal Steele and Savage at WrestleMania. So bearing in mind, this was 3 months before that match, and they still carried on with this because of that storyline. I remembered how bad that was and how long it went. And when I saw them going in and out of the ring, I was like, please don't give me another one of them because I might actually give it
a point because it's not that.
Yep.
Okay.
Because I might have given them, if we saw the same again, I'd have been so angry, I think I might have given it negative.
Okay.
Which I haven't actually done for a wrestling match. I've done it for that boxing thing, but not a wrestling match.
Okay.
And they didn't. It was shorter, and I was just so relieved. I went 1 star. I didn't even think about it straight away. But I completely get where you landed on it as well.
Nothing.
Mean Gene is listening to a cassette player, which is a sentence I haven't said for a long time, if ever.
Yeah, I put old school Walkman.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Before, He's interrupted by the Hulkster. Hogan asks him what he's doing, and Gene says he's listening to the music that accompanies the highlight video of the year for 1985. Uh-huh. Hogan says they should watch it.
No.
What we effectively now see is a typical 80s montage of Hogan beating up everyone. We of course see other notable faces like JYD, Piper, Mr. T, Savage, Orndorff and Andre.
Oh yeah, they get a tiny little second.
They do. The more I listen to this, the more I think I'm watching a training montage for a Rocky film. It's like, heart's on fire. I don't know, that's all I was thinking for it. A lot of the highlights are the moments we saw at WrestleMania 1 or the three Saturday night's main events that we've already covered on this show. Holly, did this make you feel nostalgic or did you find it boring and annoying?
Boring and annoying.
I thought there might be a little touch of nostalgia there for you. But no, that's fine.
I mean, I've seen them, so I was like, oh yeah, like, I've seen that. But also, this was the longest hour of life.
Hour?
Yes.
Well, you mean the show?
Yes.
That's because you left it late.
So, but no, it's not, because it was shit. So, also by this point, I'm like, I would rather than do the Hogan flashback, because ultimately that's what it was, let's do another water slide race. Okay. Put someone else up there.
Right, so you said this was the longest hour of your life. Okay, cool. I'm going to challenge that based on your own logic. Every match we've seen, apart from the Randy Savage match, you've scored well. Every outside...
Well...
2.5 stars.
Yeah, but it's all the stuff in between, like...
You've enjoyed every outside...
I feel like from here onwards, it's absolutely rubbish.
But the water park stuff, you've enjoyed all of that. The only thing you haven't enjoyed...
I'm allowed to think what I
think. No, it's fine. Slog. But Savage and... But it was only like a 3-minute thing in the show so far you haven't liked. And you said it's the longest hour.
Yeah. We're not finished yet.
Well, okay, fair.
This what is coming, I think, really. If it stopped here...
Yeah.
It would have been all right. I think it's what's coming that is just dire.
Okay. The highlight package ends with Hulk Hogan flexing at the end of WrestleMania. And as we go back to the arena, Jess asks, did he blink or did he not see himself in that clip at all? Ventura blames Vince and Dick Ebersole for conspiring to not have him feature in that video. And I'm inclined to agree with him. The man fell in cake. Show the people what they want.
Oh, Jesse.
We head back to the entryway where Mean Gene is stood beside Nikolai Volkoff and Freddie Blassie. Mean Gene asks Volkoff about his upcoming peace match, and the Big Russian says that the Russians are a peaceful people and he will not stop until the whole world is peaceful. That is certainly one take by Comrade Nikolai. He says that this is the first step to end American militarism, and before we sign off, here is the Iron Sheik to remind us, Russia number one, Iran number one, but no... Hawk Tour.
Not this time.
Freddie, I really want to do the impression for that, but I'm just not in the mindset to do it. Freddie Blassie confirms that Sheik is here to lend his moral support as he's a good friend of Volkoff's, and that is all. From here, we see footage of a skydive which we're led to believe is Corporal Kirchner, and the man is standing beside Jess at the water park. Ventura says, we will see how well the corporal fares with water. Kirchner believes it won't be any problem as he's received the best training in the world and he could be dropped anywhere and have no issue surviving. I don't know what he thinks happens in water parks, but the survival skills will not likely be needed here.
It's probably a bit harsh, but he has the personality of a wet mop. But he's got a lovely set of eyes on him.
Moppy too hot.
He's got very nice, like, eyes, but when he's talking, he's dead behind them.
Yeah.
Like... So there's no...
It's like he's going to the auto queue.
Yeah, he's learned his lines.
Agreed.
And he's just delivering them.
His physical charisma's fine, but his talking charisma is not there.
Yeah, I know.
Jess reminds him this will be a peace match where skill, not combat strength, is required. Kirchner, again, is unfazed. The corporal now demonstrates the best way to enter the water by taking the zip line and dropping in. Thank God he showed us, because I'd have just completely fucking lost it and run face first into the rocks. We now go back to the arena where we're treated to the Soviet national anthem as sung by Nikolai Volkoff as the Iron Sheik does his I'm a little teapot stance next to him. Before he can finish, we get patriotic military music play as a troop of soldiers with flags march Corporal Kirchner to the ring. We go to the match. Nikolai Volkoff with Freddie Blassie and Iron Sheik versus Corporal Kirchner in a peace match. What I learned very quickly in this match about what a peace match is no illegal moves, basically. Everyone has to treat things upstanding and be good sportsmen about
it.
No low blows, no cheating, nothing of that nature. After a commercial break, the match begins and we see the two men shake hands.
Yes.
Must be an obligation in a peace match. They circle for a moment before locking up and Volkov marches the corporal back first to the ropes, but does provide a clean break. Second lock-up sees a reversal of the previous scenario and we get another clean break. Dean Malenko is ensuring this does indeed take place. He was also refereeing this match. Go behind waistlock takedown by Nikolai as a USA chant starts to get voice. Counter by Kirshner into an armlock and he transitions to a side headlock as they make their way back to their feet. Side headlock takedown by Volkov uses the positioning to roll Kirshner onto his back for a two count. Back to their feet and Volkov powers his way into a battle of top wristlocks that is very even as both men look to gain an advantage. They slowly make their way to the ropes and we get another clean break. Another go behind waistlock takedown by Volkov and he transitions to a bridging pin but can't keep it in place and they scramble back to their feet. Body slam is countered by Kirshner into an O'Connor roll but Volkov rolls through. Back to the side headlock by Kirshner until they wind up in the corner and still there is no cheap shot on the break from Nikolai. Another shake of the hands, and I'll admit, I'm not hating this.
Yeah.
Side headlock into a hammerlock by the corporal, who picks the leg but is booted to the ropes. Who what? Side headlock into a hammerlock by the corporal? No, who gets his leg picked, because... Hang on.
I don't know.
Yeah, so he... Yeah, no, so he had his leg picked. Yeah, 100% he had his leg picked. So he falls down to his back. Where are we here on my notes? Oh yeah, who gets his leg picked but is booted to the ropes. However, he cartwheels free, he being Nikolai, free of the presumed monkey flip that was coming.
Yep.
He hits the ropes and knocks Kirshner down with a shoulder block but misses the second one as he's taken down to the canvas with a hammerlock. Volkov makes his way back to his feet and looks to escape with a body slam but Kirshner instead gets a small package for the 1-2-no kick out. They lock up and end in the ropes once more, but this time Nikolai drives a big knee to the borderline midsection on the break before lifting the corporal up and dropping him neck first across the ropes. The Russian hits the ropes and drops a big knee drop, across the throat and hooks the leg for the 1-2-3. Volkov is your winner by pinfall. The Sheik enters the ring and spits toward Kirshner, who looks furious, and he attacks Volkov with a kick before body slamming Sheik. Big double noggin knocker sends the heels to the outside, but it doesn't change the end result. Holly, what were your thoughts on the match?
That was all right. I say all right. Very predictable, obviously, because it's a... They say it's a peace match, and yes, he didn't win, but it's that sort of... He didn't win, but he still gets over at the end.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, oh, okay, fine. It wasn't too long. It was just that whole sort of, we've talked about it before, that whole like every other country is the enemy and US will always, it's
triumph.
That sort of match, isn't it? Which was fine. I did Google this guy actually because I didn't know who he was.
What, Corporal Kirshner?
Yes.
You've seen him before?
I'm sure I have, but I don't remember. But I didn't really, he was actually a paratrooper.
Mm-hmm.
In 2006, WWE announced that he was dead and he wasn't. It's boggling.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's not funny.
Not funny for him.
Well, he came out, didn't he, and said that actually he was, even though he was very much so still alive, he was honoured that they'd even mentioned him, considering that he hadn't been there for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story that he tells about his mum ringing him, being like, they've just announced she's been dead.
It's amazing. I think it was WrestleMania 2. We saw him in a flag match with Volkov at WrestleMania 2.
Okay.
On one of those shows. I don't remember which one it was, but they definitely had a match. That was the first and only other time, apart from here, that we've seen him.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they're feuding. What did you score the match?
I gave it a 1.5. I don't know. It was fine. I think, again, to me, that's a generous score, but it wasn't too long.
If you think that's generous, 2.75 I gave it.
Wow, okay.
Because I liked the technical wrestling exchanges between the two.
Okay.
I've never seen Nikolai Volkov have a match like that. I didn't know he had that in his repertoire. So to see him do that and do it well with a guy that I don't really care about in any respect, no offence to him,
yeah.
I thought that was impressive. it was also well, I thought the story was told really well in terms of the clean breaks went on for a lot longer than I thought. I thought it was going to be, you'd get one clean break, that's it, and then he's going to be a dick. But it went a good portion of the time. Sheik and Blassie had no influence on the match.
Mm.
So I was like, yeah, do you know what? That was actually pretty good. So 2.75. It was above average for me, just.
Okay.
The next thing we are shown is the beatdown Ricky Steamboat suffered at the hands of Morocco and Mr. Fuji at the end of the worst show I have seen on this podcast. When we come back from commercial, we see Don Morocco on the wave pool machine getting off his surfboard and being surrounded by bikini-clad women who are fawning all over him. Back in the arena, Mean Gene is interviewing Morocco and Mr. Fuji and starts off by saying they have a history of using underhanded tactics against the dragon. Morocco mockingly asks, oh, was the dragon complaining? Gene says that with Steamboat now having the JYD as his tag team partner, this can present a few problems for the pairing of Fuji and Morocco. Morocco begins cutting a shithouse promo, saying he would only be afraid of the JYD if he worked for the postal service and wore suspenders, before asking Mr. Fuji what they do with dogs in Japan.
It's weird, because it kind of comes across like he forgets everything that he's meant to say. And he goes,
I think he does.
Fuji, what do you think?
I genuinely think that's what happens. Mr. Fuji lives up to a number of stereotypes by listing the number of ways they cook dogs and says the JYD can pick his choice. On commentary, Jess says that they even eat dog raw in Japan, and Vince asks if that is because they have never heard of hot dogs. Deary me. Back to Mean Gene, who now has the dragon and JYD beside him, and he asks Steamboat if he is a glutton, having been hoodwinked, bushwhacked, and everything else between and by Mr. Fuji. Steamboat lists everything Fuji and Morocco have done to him, but he says the one thing they haven't done is beaten him in that ring. No, but they did hang you.
Mm.
Let's not forget that, which was an image we do see slightly beforehand where he's like dribbling out of the mouth, which is unfortunate. The dragon says that he has the best partner alongside him, I'd have taken Hogan, and that Fuji and Morocco may have bitten off a little bit more than they can chew tonight. Again, dog analogy. JYD says that Fuji and Morocco are bad examples for children, and he will do everything he can to help Ricky do something about that. The one person who doesn't make a dog reference.
Yeah.
JYD.
Yeah.
Holly, it's now time for the main event of the evening.
Yay.
Magnificent Morocco and Mr. Fuji. Imagine Mr. Fuji headlining in the ring, two Saturday night's main events in a row.
I know.
Versus the Junkyard Dog and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. When we return from commercial break, we see Steamboat and Fuji brawling as the bell sounds and Morocco hits a running dropkick on the JYD. Fuji sends Steamboat face first multiple times into the buckles before throwing him to the outside. Meanwhile, Morocco hits a knee drop on the dog. Morocco stomps away as Mr. Fuji has gone outside and body slams the dragon to the concrete floor. And it's about as safe a body slam as you're going to see, because Steamboat hits feet first and then just kind of falls from there. So, not pleasant, granted, but it's about as well as you could take it. Morocco connects with a knee lift on JYD, but his corner whip is reversed and he bounces out back into a body drop from the dog. Snapmare by JYD, who misses with the following falling headbutt, and this allows Morocco to make the tag. Fuji hits a number of martial arts strikes that put the dog on the canvas. He looks to continue the trend, but finds himself scooped into the air and dropped with a body slam. Fuji is on his knees, begging off, but JYD closes in. He pulls Fuji to his feet, but the devious one strikes free and tags in Morocco. The big man is too overzealous as he walks right into an arm drag takedown and a big body slam that gets a near fall. Morocco accidentally marches into the wrong corner and eats a big right hand from the dragon before eating one from the dog. Headbutt by JYD and Morocco stumbles back first into his corner where Fuji makes the tag. I'm just reading this and the more I read it, the more I think it sounds like a pub. The dog and dragon.
Oh yeah, fair.
Definitely a pub establishment, absolutely. No doubt. I'm going to have to look that up, see if there is actually one called the Dog and Dragon. Definitely will be in Wales, I reckon.
Oh, for sure.
Where are we here? Worth it. Losing my place. Oh, no, I've completely lost myself. Oh, yeah. Dropping Morocco's now looking silly.
Fuji's tagged in.
Is he? So he walks into the... Morocco stumbles back first into... Yep. More martial arts open strikes by Fuji, and he hits an elbow to the back of the neck before tagging out, holding JYD in place for a strike to the gut. Elbow drop by Morocco, who is now looking to set up for a pile driver. Holly's getting worried. But from the apron, Steamboat gets a JYD chant going and the dog counters three with a back body drop. Both men are down, but Morocco manages to get to his corner first for the tag and Fuji cuts the dog from reaching his own. Falling headbutt to the groin, as the ref is busy shepherding Morocco out of the ring. Morocco, the legal man, and he stomps on the ribs and face before one to the back of the head. Now the side of the face. Morocco drops a knee to the head as Steamboat is desperate to be tagged in. Corner whip sends JYD into the buckles, but he just avoids the shoulder charge and Morocco hits the ring post.
Oh, have a drink and have a big one.
JYD crawls a big drink, yeah?
Yes.
Not too sour. Okay, cool.
No.
JYD crawls and finally tags the dragon, who martial arts up and unloads with dragon chops in the corner. Corner whip and follow-up choke before Steamboat hits Fuji with one as well. No, and follow-up chop, excuse me. Off the ropes goes Morocco and he eats an elbow to the midsection and back fist to the face before a leaping kick to the back of the head. The dragon has him by the legs and catapults him into Fuji, who had made his way into the ring. I liked that.
Yeah.
Steamboat goes to the top rope and connects with a crossbody that gets a count of two until Fuji breaks it up. Fuji now tags in and looks for an atomic drop, but Steamboat lands on his feet and tags JYD. Kick and headbutt from the dog sees Fuji fall like a tree. He makes the cover, and that is enough for the 1, 2, 3. Steamboat and JYD win by pinfall, or the dog and dragon, as I'm now going to call them.
Nice, yeah.
The dragon wants more of Morocco, but is being prevented from getting there by Hebner, and it is the magnificent one who gets two right hands in using this as an opening. All calms down, and the winners have their hands raised in the middle of the ring. Thoughts on the match?
It was all right. Again, it wasn't too long, so for me, that's. I think the lengths of these matches have been spot on.
Maybe I agree, actually.
Not too long. All fine. I gave it 1.25. It was all right. It just nothing's hitting for me, and I couldn't really pinpoint specifically what I was wanting.
Okay.
But just wasn't hitting the mark for me.
Well, we might have been wide apart on the last one, but we're bang on for this 1.25.
Oh, okay.
Apart from the Savage match, this was my least favourite on the show.
Yeah.
And it was, from memory, definitely the worst match on the last show, which is sad when Ricky Steamboat's involved.
Yeah.
I will be honest. Well, we'll get to the end of the show in a bit anyway, because there's a little bit more we need to tidy up.
Yes.
But I, again, wasn't finding it as much of a struggle as you were at this point, which is unlike me, because you normally take to the Saturday night main events better than I do.
Yeah.
Because it's all the shithousery in between that I really struggle with. But for some reason, I wasn't bothered by it. After a commercial break, we return to Vince and Jess on commentary, with the latter having found his multicoloured cape, and they discuss the fun in the sun they have had in Tampa, Florida. The two recap the show, and Vince says that the unquestionable highlight was Hulk Hogan retaining the WWF title, but Jess strongly disagrees, saying it was him being the only commentator in the world to be able to back up his words, and he challenges any other commentator in the world to do the same. The final commercial break comes and goes, and Vince says they hope everyone enjoyed the show. They'll see them next time and wishes everyone a Happy New Year. We go to a gallery of still images and video footage from the year of 1985 in the WWF as the credits roll and the show comes to a close. Holly,
yes.
I think we already know which way you're leaning in terms of how you felt about the show, but what did you score it as an overall product?
I gave it 3 out of 10.
Ooh.
But I don't know in comparison, I didn't go back and look at what I've given others. I probably should have at some point, but yeah, I just don't know. It feel like I didn't mind all the water slide stuff. Fine, very quick, like it's over,
snappy.
I just didn't mind any of it, but there was just something was missing from this one compared to the other ones that I just wasn't that invested in, I think.
Do you know what's weird? This is comfortably the best Saturday night's main event we've seen. By a distance.
Yeah, for you to think that is fair, like, but for me, this is just the worst one. I think.
I thought the matches were better. I was less frustrated by the cutaways.
Yeah.
The only thing that was a real damp squib for me was the George Steele and Savage match.
Yeah.
And that was only because, well, it was crap. Let's be fair.
Yeah.
But I was also having flashbacks and, you know, horror thoughts about their match at WrestleMania 2, which is one of the worst things I've ever seen. Which, again, is a shame when you think it's a Savage match.
I know.
So I'm going to be much higher than you. I go 6.
Okay.
I think, on the ratings. Like I said, it's not an excellent show, but certainly by the comparison, it's a good Saturday night's main event. And the ratings were high as well. So that is interesting when you consider the one that they came off the back of was Hogan tagging with Andre against Bundy and Studd, which was awful. But yeah, I actually thought you would probably be closer to my way of thinking on this. This is the first show in a while that we've had a significantly different take on it, I think. Normally we're within half a point of each other. Mm. And this one we've got, I've doubled your score effectively for it.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty. And yet we actually agreed on a few of the match scorings or were there or thereabouts. Yeah. It's just as an overall.
Yeah, just as an overall, just something was missing.
The sum was less than the parts. Because if you broke it down on an individual basis, you only had like one or two things you didn't massively care for. Yeah. But still, something missing. Fair enough. Fair enough. I guess, you know, the key thing to take away is what, Holly, was your outfit of the night? Got contenders.
There's definitely contenders here.
Right, I'm thinking of the contenders.
Okay.
Hmm. Three come to mind immediately. I'd say four, but I know you won't have included the fourth person. Shall I start? How many have you got?
One, two, three, four.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's five, but one is the same person twice.
Okay, so Jesse's on there twice.
Yeah.
And I nearly counted him as two as well. Savage.
Yep.
Elizabeth.
They're in the same.
Okay, fine. Yeah. You won't have him on there, but he deserves it. Jimmy Hart for that suit.
Absolutely not, no.
And Gene Okerlund for his tuxedo bathing suit.
He's on there.
Who I'm missing one, am I?
Yes.
Ooh. Vince won't be on there.
Absolutely not. I've seen that outfit 500 times.
I'm trying to think. So was it someone in a match or was it someone? Okay, so Heenan.
Yes.
Okay, lovely. So for me, it's a comfortable winner.
Okay.
It's Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, by far. I've got him in, obviously in twice, but he's got the camo flat cap, the winged glasses, the dangly earrings, the no top followed by Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat, and what looks to be the pastel, obviously we saw them later, but they were pastel,
tie-dye-ish,
flowered, like flowered pants. And then later on, the Speedo and then the pink, like, fluffy sarong. Fucking brilliant. And Savage and Elizabeth, yeah, it looked great. But no.
No, Jesse wins. I agree with you.
By far, I agree Jesse with you. Wins.
I would say Jesse is further away from Savage in second place than Savage is far away from Heenan in third.
Yeah.
I think the gap between those two is closer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Thanks.
I do try and get into your mindset rather than give what I think is the best one. But, yeah, no, I think there's absolutely hit the nail on the head for this one. Okay. And that actually brings us to the end of this show.
It does.
Any takeaway thoughts that you... Not food. Although food would be lovely, actually, having said that. But any takeaway thoughts on this? Has it shied you away from future Saturday night's main events?
No, not really. I'd still go into them with optimism and a fresh mind.
Lovely. Pleased to hear it.
Yeah, no. Just wait to see what the theme of the next one is, because we've had Halloween, we've had Thanksgiving, now we've
got an idea.
Sun, so it's going to be what?
Valentine's.
Oh, yeah, probably. Oh, God. Great.
Well, I don't know. I'm guessing.
That'd be a fucking low-scoring one for me, then.
Nothing wrong with love. So I guess that leaves us with nothing else to do other than share the socials with the listeners.
WinTwicePod at gmail.com and then WinTwicePod on everything else for show recommendations, just pure comments of anything
love.
You've listened to. Yeah, that's it really.
But it's always nice, as Holly said, to hear about what you guys and gals think of the shows that we're seeing or the individuals involved. I do try wherever I can to come back to those comments, specifically on the YouTube side. Obviously Holly heads up the Instagram portion of events, and we've actually had a lot of communication through there as well, some of the more detailed feedback we've had on there, and it's always appreciated and welcome, so thank you for that, and long may it continue. But with that being said, it's time to hit the old dusty trail.
Absolutely.
And until next time, everyone, take care.
Bye.
Until next time, this has been a Win Twice Wrestling production. Peace out.